Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriage between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, or if you're feeling a little radio shy, you can email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Before I introduce my very special guest for tonight, I would like to just remind people that here it is in the end of January. I'm sitting in a blizzard in Philadelphia, and I know that a lot of other people are sitting in horrible weather also. So what's keeping me really peaceful and focused is the upcoming healing weekend that's going to take place in April on the 23rd and 24th. And I'm really excited about the opportunity to meet up with our women, our straight wives, who are so dynamic and who are just the best women that you'll ever meet anywhere, for a really exciting weekend of sharing our stories, of caring, of just knowing what everybody's thinking before we even say it. And we'll have some wonderful, wonderful guest counselors and therapists who will be there to help you on your way to healing. So if you would like information, just write to me at bonkay@aol.com, and in the subject box, just put Healing Weekend, and I'll be more than happy to send you the information. Also, if you'd like to get onto my newsletter list, feel free also to just write to me at bonkay@aol.com, and I'll be very happy to send you my newsletter. It comes out on a monthly basis. It's always geared for mid-month, but that doesn't mean I won't be a few days late. But I'd just like to send a big, big hug to our friend Jen in Texas and let her know that we're all thinking about her and sending love her way. And now I'd like to introduce my good friend and special guest, Kathy Holguin, who lives in California, where there is no blizzard at the moment, in Orange County. And welcome, Kathy. How are you?
Thank you, Bonnie. I'm so glad to be here and get to share with some of your women. I am wonderful. Skies are clear.
That's right. And you know what? When I talk to you anytime, Kathy, it's like sunshine's coming my way. So I'm really happy that you're here tonight. Because as a therapist, you've been wonderful in working with our women, because if anybody understands them, it's you. And some people have heard you before who are listening tonight, and they're so excited to hear you. They've met you at our healing weekends, but some people haven't, and maybe you can tell them a little bit about your story.
Oh, I'd be glad to. So I was just looking at my dates, and I thought, wow, that's pretty amazing. I have to actually look back at the date and try to pinpoint down times, because when I was in the midst of it, I didn't think a time or a future would ever exist or that I would even care about a tomorrow. So pretty cool. But I would say in about 11 years ago, my now ex-husband told me that he was gay. Well, actually, he didn't tell me he was gay. He acted out in many different ways. He was a pastor at a church, very large church. I had grown up at this church. It was about 3,000 members or so, and so we were very visible family. We had five children, and so everybody looked upon us and thought, oh, life is just great for them. And my ex had acted out. He was going to bathhouses and doing a lot of things on the down low, as they say. And I had no idea that he had the potential to do any of these behaviors, much less to think that he might be gay. And so I don't want to make the story too long, but when I was 7 months pregnant with my third son, he told me that he was suicidal and that he thought he needed to be hospitalized. And I know for a fact it was on my birthday in 1997. And so we admitted him to a psych hospital, and he was very suicidal and had some really deep depression. Little did I know that his suicide ideation and his depression was as a result of him leading a double life. So it was only through that intervention that I found out he had been acting out. And so I stayed with him. A long story shorter, I stayed with him for 2 or 3 years and worked on myself, and I thought I could fix him. And
at that point, how much did you really know about homosexuality in a marriage? Had you ever heard of it even before?
Absolutely not. No, I had prayed for the right husband. I even found, Bonnie, I thought this is so funny, I even found the prayer that I wrote on my wedding day, just being so grateful that I met this wonderful, you know, outgoing man who seemed to put me and all my needs first. And so, no, absolutely not. I had absolutely zero concept of a gay man wanting to marry a heterosexual woman.
Mm-hmm.
In my case, I know it's different for different women, but in my case, there was a sexual component to our relationship. And so when I found out that he was acting out, I was so shocked. I literally thought, like, an airplane could have landed in my living room and I would have been more surprised, you know, than finding out that he was gay.
Mm-hmm.
So, at that time, we had three children. My third son was born that I was pregnant with. I went through all the therapy with him, and I thought I could fix him. And clearly, that was not possible. He led me to believe that he was healed, that he no longer was going to act out, that this was just a one-time thing. And I stayed with him for about 3 or 4 more years, until he started acting in really peculiar ways. And then, sure enough, I found out that at that point he had accelerated his behavior, and he was going to bathhouses and all kinds of things that I just had no concept even existed. And so And then at that time, and then I filed for divorce. So that was actually a few years later, and we'd actually gotten pregnant and had twins after the birth of our third son. And so we ended up divorcing. I filed for divorce thinking, well, now he's really going to get it and understand how serious this is and it's not okay. And he never decided that he wanted anything more. And then his behaviors became more and more obvious. A really important component that I think is really important for women to know is that the more he realized he couldn't manipulate me and he couldn't lie to me anymore, the more I became the villain, and the more he began to really treat me in ways that were really, really horrible. He reported me to child services. He did all kinds of things that to try to discredit my my character and my integrity. And to this day, he still tries to do that whenever he gets the opportunity, what, some 12, 13 years later. So, yeah, it's been an interesting ride.
Kathy, as a woman who grew up in a Christian background, correct? You had a strong faith background?
Yes.
And so that, you know, you really believed in God, you really believed in prayer, you really believed that there were certain values. Did you think that back then when you first found out that homosexuality was a choice, that you could change his choice?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, I really thought that I would be able to sort of, what do you say, pray him out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I had faith that he had enough faith and enough integrity to make a choice where he would prefer his family and his children over his lifestyle. And that was a huge education for me to realize that if somebody decides that they want to have a gay lifestyle, they're going to have a gay lifestyle whether you know about it or not.
Well, I really believe that it's not a lifestyle, it's who a person is inside, you know, that it's not something somebody would choose if they could choose to be straight. But I think it takes a long time to acknowledge that, because I hear many of our women say often that, you mean they're willing to sacrifice a family, they're willing to sacrifice their community, they're willing to sacrifice everything over sex. But for them, it's just not about sex, it's who they are as people. I mean, they are gay people. Now, that doesn't mean that they can't make a decision not to be who they are, but then they just suffer inside, and they don't make your life easy because they resent you, because that's not who they are. They're like, you can't put a gay man into a straight marriage and expect it to live happily ever after. And I know a lot of women don't understand that. And do you run across that when you're counseling women?
Yeah. When I'm counseling women, especially that have a loss and a betrayal at this magnitude, my approach is, because there are so many question marks and there's so much confusion and you feel like you're in such a fog, it seems like for such a long time, that it takes so long for you to kind of see your way out, that my hope is to focus on the person and the personhood of the woman that I'm working with. In other words, to find who she is, what makes her happy, what are her goals and dreams and aspirations for her life, whether she is or is not married to this man who has betrayed her.
And I think that's so important, because so many women lose who they are through these marriages. And I think that's the main priority, is to find who you are, because we do lose ourselves. You know, in trying to be somebody who can't please someone, you know, we do a lot of things that some women are not very proud of, and I understand it. We're always trying to please our husbands or accommodate their needs, even if it goes against our moral feelings or how we feel as a woman. And so I've heard so many sad stories of women who really try to, you know, be a good wife, meaning that they'll accommodate their husband's sexual needs, which are totally diverse from what they really feel they can do. And they do things that they live with forever that they feel badly about. And I feel so sad for women who do this because it's not what they wanted. It's not what they, you know, signed up for, as Brian Hooper always says. He didn't sign up for it. But they go out of their way to accommodate men who can never please them because they just can't be honest with them. And that's where I think they really lose themselves. So do you find that also?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that it's so difficult because you're trying so hard to maintain your marriage. You're trying to maintain a loving relationship with this man who you love and adore, usually. And in my case, my husband was my best friend. We were very close in terms of everything else that mattered in our lives, our children, our careers. But when it came to him being able to be in a faithful relationship and not risking my emotional and physical health, it was not possible for him. And so that was the distancing myself away from him and actually even ending the marriage that much more difficult because I really did care and love this man deeply.
And I think that's an issue that a lot of women struggle with also. And they don't understand it. And this is where I think that these marriages are different than other marriages.
Mm-hmm.
One of the many ways. There's a lot of ways. But one is that many of us still love our husbands, even if we can't keep the marriage together. Where most marriages that end in divorce, it's because the couples don't love each other anymore. Would you say that's correct?
Absolutely. And I think that's what makes this situation so unique because you have to do this emotional distancing and separation and your heart fights against itself. You know, it's like it doesn't make emotional sense to you to be distancing yourself from this man whom you love. And I remember going through a time where I thought, well, am I able to live with somebody that I can't trust to be faithful to me? Am I willing to never have a sexual experience with my husband ever again because I'm not willing to risk myself physically? I had to ask myself a lot of those hard questions, and clearly I was not in a position emotionally or physically to be able to make those accommodations. My body would not let me. I was having migraine headaches. I was hospitalized. I felt like I was having a heart attack. My physical body was at the point where I was unable to maintain that kind of trauma and drama.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to force myself to separate from him on an emotional level. And that was so difficult. On top of course, so wondering about my kids and how it was going to play out for them, for their futures. And it is such a tangled, complicated scenario, and it's very different than when you're married to someone who's heterosexual who hasn't betrayed you from day one in terms of who they're attracted to and why.
Can you talk a little more about that, Kathy? Because I think so many of our women just don't understand how this is happening. Why people say it's so hard, why can't you just get over this? And a million people get divorced all the time. Why are you taking so long? Why do you feel yours is so different? Maybe you can explain a little bit why these marriages are so different.
Yeah, I think there are several reasons, kind of like you talked about, Bonnie. But I think that from day one, the research shows that a very, very, very high percentage of these men, over 90-some percent of these men, know they are attracted to have same-sex attraction. And they don't necessarily plan to act out, but they know that they are attracted to men, even attracted to men more than women, or maybe even only men. But for whatever reason, they choose to marry. And so the women are, from day one, have been suffering a betrayal that they never even knew existed, or that they would have to be dealing with in their life. So the betrayal aspect is huge. Because when you've been betrayed, how do you ever trust yourself? How do you trust anything going on around you? You know, honestly, for me as a Christian, I have to say, Bonnie, my faith was so strengthened in this process, even in the midst of the hurt and the pain and the betrayal, because the one thing that stayed steadfast was my intimate relationship with the Lord. And I have to say that that is truly what sustained me. For different women, maybe it'll be something different. But for me, my faith was a huge piece of that. And then I had conflicted feelings about that, because here I am. I wrote this prayer on my wedding day. I prayed for the right person to come into my life. I prayed for guidance and wisdom, whether he was the one. And so there was an element of being angry with God, and I had to work that out, and I had to trust that it would come out in the end, and it has. But that's part of the reason it's so complicated. I think one of the other reasons is because the women, at least that I work with, have got to be, Bonnie, the most nurturing, loving, caring, accomplished, smart women that I have ever met in my life. And I know that personally, and the research actually shows it. The research actually refers to those of us who've been in these situations as superwomen, because we believe we can do it all. We can, you know, we can be the professional. We can raise five kids. We can go to school part-time and full-time and be on the honor roll. And, you know, and not just that, we can go get our doctorates and our master's degrees, and we can, right, we can start companies. And I think that these men marry us because they know that we have such an increased capacity to take on whatever life hands us. But that nurturing piece of us a lot of times gets used against us, right? Like that daylighting happens, and then you start to question your reality. You start to question your reasoning. So I think that's a big difference in terms of the types of dilemma that we face, too, in divorcing when it's a same-sex attraction issue.
And how about the whole questioning by people? For instance, I'm sure people were thinking, Kathy, she has five children. That man produced five children with her. How could he be gay?
Mm-hmm.
Was that a question that you think people were asking?
Yeah. It's a question I was asking. And my second question is, why would you want to have five children if you know, I have four boys, right? I have four boys and one girl. So how, as a gay man and living such a conflicted life, how do you expect to be able to be a model or an example or parent for boys who at some point are going to be able to figure out that you don't have what it takes, right? Not because he's gay, but because he has, how much integrity is in that? How are they supposed to ever respect you? Knowing that you married their mother, you know, on such a false pretense.
And what was his answer to you when you would approach him on that?
It was so hard, Bonnie, because I think that people in some way feel like you are partly responsible for being in this situation. And I had to learn to love myself enough to not give myself over to people who were going to harm me, who were going to ask those types of questions because they were either A, curious, or because they wanted somehow to make themselves feel better by blaming me for being in this situation, right? It lets them off the hook for having to step in and be supportive and help, for one thing. So I had to really figure out who was safe and who was not safe and who was truly worthy of my trust and who wasn't. And that was a process for me to have to figure out who those people were. And there were people in my life who were not good quality people. They were people who didn't deserve my trust and loyalty. Because think about it, you know, whether somebody, even if somebody was completely responsible and culpable in their situation, I don't care what it is, why would you want to shame and blame them when they're already down, right? When they're already trying to get their next, you know, gasp of air, why would you want to push them under the water again? That makes, I mean, the fact they're even asking the question to me tells me that they're probably not real safe.
Was it harder because you think that you were in the church? Did that give you an extra extra obstacle there to overcome.
Oh, that just makes me laugh because, you know, it was so hard because we were so visible. And I, people literally, like, did not know what to do with me because they didn't know what had happened. Some of them even kind of looked at me like it's your fault that we don't have this wonderful man leading us in worship anymore. And it was kind of like, you know, yeah, it was very, very difficult. I stayed in the situation because the Lord spoke to me very clearly, Bonnie, and said, I will be your front guard. I will be your rear guard. I will expose truth, and I will be your defender. You don't have to defend yourself. I will do it for you. And you know what? As the months and years passed, it's true. That's exactly what happened. People began to find out the truth, and I never had to defend myself. I never had to explain away my decisions, why I made any decisions. And my integrity took a hit, definitely, within my community. People looked at me like their heads were kind of cocked, like, huh? You know? But as the years have gone by, my integrity has withstood the test. And I have to say, that's not something I couldn't have defended myself even if I had wanted to, because I just didn't have it in me.
In the earlier days of your marriage, were you blaming yourself at all for the failure, for his homosexuality, for his inability to be a straight husband to you? Because I think a lot of our women take that, you know, responsibility on themselves, where it has nothing to do with them.
You know, that's a good question. I think because we had a sexual relationship and it seemed to be satisfying, I don't think that I felt that as much blame as maybe I would have if he had been condescending and rejecting and critical, and you know how some can be very verbal about that. And because this was so outside my realm of I didn't understand any part of it, that I think there was a piece of me that thought, wow, maybe if I had done something differently, maybe if I had, you know, tweaked this or done that or lost more weight or made more money. You know, I think there was a part of me that thought there was something I could have done. But then there was another part of me that as I logically looked at it, I thought, you know what, there is no truth in that. And so I had to just hold on to what was true about me. And but I know that in a lot of couples, that game gets played a lot higher. Like, you don't look right, or this isn't, or if you just had this done, or, you know, that wasn't so much the case. So my head didn't get played with in that way quite as much. But I think, yeah, there was a little piece of me that thought, wow, you know, maybe I was a little bit prettier, or if I'd done this or done that, that maybe I could have made a difference in his sexual preference. But deep down, it was pretty obvious that I don't have what they have, right? I mean, we're just not made like that.
Absolutely. No doubt about that. Mm-hmm. But have you ever heard of this situation during your marriage? Were you aware that this does happen?
No. Not at the time.
So did you feel pretty much isolated and alone, that
Absolutely.
You're the only person you ever heard of who's going through this?
Absolutely, Bonnie. And that's why I've dedicated my graduate studies and my career and hopefully my writing and any time I can to this issue, because I was so isolated. I was completely alone. I did not know one person on the planet that had this happen to them. And so I really, really thought that this was unique. I thought that it was just one in a million kind of thing that could happen. I had no idea as to how often it happens and on what scale. So No, I was completely alone. Completely. I didn't have you. I didn't have anybody like you. We didn't have the internet like we do now where you can just Google something. No, I didn't have any of that.
And I think that's the most common feeling all of us have is a feeling of isolation. Mm-hmm. And even though there is an internet now, and of course we can find support, you still feel so isolated in this situation.
Yeah.
And I think there's a great shame factor also because people don't understand this. They still feel that if a man married you and a man had children with you and he was able to make love to you, to have children with you, then what could you have done to change that in him? And I still get that, even in today's age, that where did we fail that our husbands, you know, couldn't stay with us, that they would look to men? That people think that this is something that just happened because, and on top of it, unfortunately, so many men buy into that story or spread that story. Well, I would have never turned to men, but I didn't want to cheat on her with a woman, so I just felt, you know, this was better. And people believe it. Or they'll say, I'm not gay, you know, just because, you know, I have sex with a man, because you read so many stories on the internet now where, you know, there are all kinds of therapists like Joe Court saying, well, you can be straight and be a straight guy and still have male sex because that's the way life is. It doesn't mean you're gay. And I really got tired of arguing. I don't know about you. I don't care what people call it. You know, I'm tired of arguing whether it's gay or not gay. It's just a matter that if you, you know, is it right to have, you know, your husband who wants to sleep with men? And that's really what it comes down to. Not labeling people, but understanding that you can never satisfy your husband. He will always be resenting you because you're not really the person he wants to be with. But many of these men just don't give in, give up. They just keep you there hanging on a string because they just can't be strong enough to do the right thing.
Right.
So they are looking to manipulate you, to control you, to, you know, gaylight you.
Yeah, and I, you know, I would just caution women to be really careful about the messages that they allow to penetrate as true in their hearts, because the manipulation and the guilt and the shame and the isolation and the feelings of being rejected are so prevalent. They are so strong and such a driving force for how we feel. And that's where I say, get some help, get somebody who has the perspective and the ability to help you see through that. I had a really close friend through this whole time that helped me see his manipulation and helped me wade through what was true and what was not true about who I am. And I think that because we are so hard on ourselves, and we do expect so much from ourselves, that it's easy to be manipulated, and it's easy to feel shame, and it's easy to feel guilt, and like somehow, some way, you know, we deserve the rejection, or we deserve to feel this kind of isolation because we should have been able to figure it out. That's, I think, the feeling I had most often was, I should have been able to figure this out. I should have been able to see it ahead of time. I shouldn't have been in all the shoulds and shouldn'ts. I should never have gotten myself in this situation. I should have never married this guy, right? And I think all of those messages, we have to learn how to be loving and caretaking of ourselves and how to wrap our arms around ourselves, hold ourselves and say, you are precious, you are dear, you are beautiful, you're lovely, you're deserving of a wonderful, beautiful, heterosexual man who will love and value you and your sexuality and all that you have to bring. And I think that as we can give ourselves messages that are truly real and true about ourselves, some of that will begin to shift. But yeah, that innate feeling of guilt and shame and isolation is just, it's deadly in many ways, I think.
I agree, and I think it's easy to say, but it takes time to believe, and it takes time to do. And in the midst of it, where life is different from us, as I say to the men who I hold accountable to do the right thing, and some of them do, not all of them do, because some of them don't want to take on the responsibility, or there's a huge network of gay married men out there that they'll other gay married men not to tell your wife the truth because it's only going to hurt you in court and financially. And, you know, they just think about themselves. But I do hold these men who come to me, and I have plenty of them, and I try to tell them, look, you got to do the right thing. Homosexuality is not a choice, but being honest about it is a choice. You know, maybe you couldn't choose your sexuality, but you can choose to be honest. But the point is that even when they're honest and they come to me and they say, I want you to help, and I say, look, I'll help your wife. You know, if you're willing to do this, I'm willing to do that. But these guys have really, you know, they've been dealing with this their whole lives. There hasn't been a time when there wasn't something there telling them something's different about me. And I'm not saying any of them go into, some of them, you know, the 95% of them go into these marriages hoping they're going to work out. I don't think these are preconceived, oh, I hate women, so I'm going to marry them. These men do, you know, to the best ability, love their wives and hope their wives will be able to fix those feelings they're having. They know they're having them. They may not call themselves gay or they may not want to be gay, no doubt. And they're hoping that marriage will resolve that for them. But, of course, it doesn't. And as time gets on, it just becomes worse. But, you know, a lot of times they've dealt with this for years, and now all of a sudden we have, they tell us, and they're like on a two-week schedule. You know, after 2 weeks, they can't understand why we can't get it. And it takes so long to absorb this because it doesn't even register, like with you, you know, or with so many other women who thought they had good marriages and they did have a sex life, and maybe they weren't very experienced, so maybe they didn't realize it wasn't that great of a sex life. But, you know, to them, it was what they knew, and it was something that they had children with, and they thought it was, you know, a good sex life. And it wasn't until they finally met a straight man that they could actually understand what a good sex life is.
Boy, no kidding.
Exactly. Because if you have nothing to judge it by, it could seem like you have a good sex life, but it's not. It's a forced, mechanical kind of sex life. You know, I just always knew when I had sex with my ex, gay husband, that he did it, but he wasn't really enjoying it. I mean, he was doing it to kind of like, because you felt he had to do it. You know, you can tell the difference between someone who's really into you and one somebody who's just doing it because they have to do it to pretend. I felt.
And, you know, and I would say, too, that it's really important for women to pay attention to what is important to them, right? What is it that they want? Because I think as all of us get older, and we move forward throughout our life, you know, we mature, and we mature emotionally, and we mature physically. And so if you're in a marriage where you are suspecting that your husband might be gay, one thing I have to just put on the radar is that if men are acting out when they come home, they are not going to use a condom with their wife because it is going to raise a red flag. And the problem with that is that the instance of disease and spreading STD is a big problem. So it's up to you to take care of yourself and take care of your physical health. For me, I just thought, okay, I have to be available for my children. I have to be the one who takes care of herself physically for her children. So even
you know
if
what makes me feel even
yourself,
worse, Kathy?
Do it for your kids.
What makes me feel worse and angry, but I know, I mean, I'm not really angry at the women per se, but some women are so desperate to keep their marriages intact. They tell me that they don't want their husbands, you know, think they're accusing them of being gay when the husbands are denying it, so they will have unprotected sex. And when you say STDs, let's say what STD means. It means we have women who are part of our network who have HIV, which changes your life. Women who have herpes that lasts a lifetime, chlamydia, they have PVC virus, they have gonorrhea, they have syphilis, and, you know, these scar you for years to come. And especially some of these diseases you just can't get rid of. You know, they become part of your daily routine. So in order to save your marriage, if you think that's going to help, it's not. And like you said, you have to think of your children first. And protecting yourself, right?
Right, and I'm ashamed to say that I decided not to have sex with my ex ever again when he violated my trust. Whether I stayed in the marriage or not, the question mark was still there. But because I decided I am not going to risk my physical health and leave my kids without a mother. And so I made a very conscious choice. And that's where I had to decide, well, am I willing to live a sexless life or sexless existence ever again? And the answer to that was a big fat no.
Well, how about with him?
But I...
Yes.
Exactly.
You were willing to live a sexless life without him, right?
And that's what I meant, without him, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right, right. And I was, at the time, I was like 30, like in my late 30s. And I remember sitting there thinking, okay, I'm in my late 30s and I'm willing to never have sex again? What is wrong with me? Right?
I know. And when you decided not to have sex with him anymore, he was probably happier than you.
Yeah, probably.
He was probably thrilled.
Well, and keep in mind,
this is what he had been waiting for, Kathy.
But this is a man to this day who will not admit that he's gay, and he lives in West Hollywood. It's like, really?
Well, a lot of gay men don't, you know, identify as gay, so that's another thing that women have to understand. You can sit and question them forever, and they're going to tell you, I am not gay. And
mm-hmm.
just because
yeah.
I have a sexual experience or, you know, it's an experimentation, or I was mm-hmm. abused when I was a child, they'll come up with, you know, 50 reasons why mm-hmm. they're not gay, but having sex with men. You
mm-hmm.
can call it whatever you want. That's what I say. You can call it asexual,
mm-hmm.
bisexual, whatever it is. I don't care what you call
mm-hmm.
it, but the point is that it's not straight. So I'll put it that way. It's definitely
yeah.
not straight.
Yeah.
We can start
and
from
you
there.
Know what? Exactly. And I think one thing to kind of keep in mind, too, Bonnie, I don't know if you want to go down this rabbit trail, but whether a person's sexuality is whatever you want to call it, if it's not heterosexual, is it going to work for you as a wife? And the answer to that, for me, was no.
Exactly. That's what I say.
But the thing
anything
that,
that's anything
the
other
thing,
than hetero is not straight.
Right. And 100% committed to me, by the way. With nothing,
mm-hmm.
you know, no loyalty, anyway. But what I was going to say is that I think that in my case, I think that my ex-husband, along with the sexual preferences that he had and his behaviors, there was also some personality disorder stuff there that I was not educated to deal with. And I didn't recognize the signs. And as I've gotten older and I've been able to work with this population a little bit, I think there is a lot of borderline personality stuff, a lot of narcissism, a lot of sociopath behaviors
mm-hmm.
that go along with the sexual preference. Now, I am not saying, don't hear me wrong, I'm not saying that gay men have, you know, are all borderline or narcissists or sociopaths. That is not what I'm saying. But I'm saying that there is a big part of this population who does marry and who does want to have a wife and children who does suffer from some of these mental illnesses. And I think
mm-hmm.
it's really important for women who are trying to separate themselves and understand all the different dynamics that they're living with to understand and be educated as to what these personality disorders look like. It wasn't until even just a few years ago that I had a therapist friend of mine tell me, you know, Kathy, he is not only a narcissist and a border, he is straight up a sociopath because of the things that he had done that were so hateful to me. And so, you know, he lacked such empathy and a complete inability to connect. And when she made that distinction, it took me to another level of understanding as to the enormity of what I had been dealing with. It wasn't
but
just
let me ask you this
gay.
Question when you go into that, and I, like I say, I really want to clarify that. I think that when you're living a lie on a daily basis, that your behavior
mm-hmm.
does become narcissistic and borderline sociopathic,
yeah.
take your choice. Because I think
mm-hmm.
that's what living a lie does to you. You develop your
mm-hmm.
own world of fantasy and compartmentalize your life. And, you know, you put yourself first and your needs first, and you're so afraid of being found out or controlled or somebody's going to find out your secret that you're always protecting yourself at the expense of the other person. And
right.
I feel that these men always put their needs first without consideration to what they're doing to harm the woman. And I know that people who are, I have a new term now, it's hetero, femme, let's see. I just had this whole thing down. Hetero femme phobia. It's when, you know, there's certain gay men who are out there who have this hatred of straight women. Hetero femme phobia. And, you know, for instance, the people, there's this like one guy who's always knocking everybody on my book reviews and saying how I'm a fraud and a phony, and he debates all of our women who try to defend me. And I tell him, stop trying to defend me. I don't care what he has to say. But when you have people there who say that this is, you know, we don't understand their pain and their suffering, I don't really, I do care. I mean, I do understand. But they don't understand what they're doing while they're doing it, and they continue to do it because they don't have that, I think they lose that connection with empathy, with caring. I don't know. They started out that way. But once they get married and live that lie and have to lie on an everyday basis, I really believe that just intensifies those behaviors. Do you believe that's possible?
Absolutely. It's almost the chicken or the egg, right? Which came first, the personality disorder? But absolutely, it exacerbates it because it will drive anybody crazy to live such a duality in their life.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think that other gay men who make the decision, they're the real heroes, not the ones who come out 25 years later and, you know, destroy a family along the way. But those men are under the same pressures and the same, you know, community pressures and family pressures and ostracizations and, you know, they're under the same gun that everybody else is, but they're still strong enough to say, no, I'm not going to do this. You know, I can't do this to somebody else. And so they don't live a double life.
Exactly. And so it is, that's why I'm, you know, I know the people, the men that are gay that try to discredit or minimize our pain. And I've had many discussions with these men. And they're wonderful, loving friends of mine, right? It's not the sexual preference. It's the lack of integrity and the lack of character to marry a straight wife or marry a straight woman, have children with her on false pretense, and then expect us to feel sorry for him because he has to embrace his sexuality.
Right.
That's crazy.
He should have embraced it before. But once again, I know a lot of these men really suffer, and I work with some who my heart really goes out to. Their life has been torn apart, so I don't want to say they're all like that. And I've met some of them who do the right thing. You know, they want to do the right thing. Not many, but some. And I give them all the support I can give them. You know, you make a mistake, you have to fix it. But some of these men just have no remorse, no regrets, and they're really angry at their wives because they feel their wives are trapping them in a marriage that they asked her to get married to. And they can't, you know, she becomes the, you know, keeper of the prison key to unlock him from his prison. And that's how they turn on you, and they treat you as if you're keeping them forced into a situation, and you become the enemy. And I tell women, the longer you stay with these guys, the more resentful they'll stay with you, but they're going to be meaner and meaner to you. And you're never going to get the satisfaction out of life. The other thing I wanted to bring up, and maybe you can comment on this, I really feel it's important for women to understand, and I know so many women come to me with this after the fact, but children know what's going on when there's problems in a marriage.
Yes.
Children know when you're not happy, and I'm sorry, when you tell me that you can hide it from the children, you're only kidding yourself. But a lot of these women later come back to me and say, you know what, I should have left because I see my daughter repeating my mistakes. I see my daughter getting into a relationship that's abusive, and she thinks because I stayed and when it's okay for her, I shouldn't have stayed. Do you agree with that?
Right.
Absolutely. Oh, yes. Yes, I do a lot of, I work actually a lot with kids
Because a lot of the kids now from some of the women I've worked with are coming up and through, and I work with them as well. And it's so interesting because most of them will tell me, oh, I knew way before my mom knew. And for them to have to carry that secret and feel that they have to protect the marriage and the home and the family system, it is so unfair to do that to kids. And
terrible.
The rates of anxiety and depression that these kids are coming out of these marriages suffering from is off the charts. It is just, it is so hard for these kids because we had the choice to marry this person. We have an existence prior to this man that we married. This is their dad. And they don't have the option of trading in their dad. And so helping your kids walk through your circumstance in truth and in honesty, helping them to appreciate the parts of their dad that are awesome and wonderful, and helping them realize that everybody has a limitation, and learning how to love both parents and giving them permission to love both parents is absolutely vital. Because kids have an intrinsic loyalty to both parents, and they love each of them. And it doesn't matter if one person has, you know, is a serial killer. They will love that parent. And so as a wise mom, it is important to model what's healthy for yourself and what's healthy for the kids. But let those kids off the hook and don't expect them to carry that secret.
Well, that, and also don't expect them to be your support team. And I know it's really hard when you feel that, you know, you've been wronged, and you have been. And you're being manipulated by, you know, your husband or ex-husband, wherever it is, and it's making your life unbearable. And it's so hard not to say dirty, filthy words about him, because I know I used to bite my tongue all the time. So it was falling out of my mouth because it was so enlarged from biting it. But I didn't want to have my children feel like, you know, every child has two parents, and their father, for right or for wrong, for straight or for gay, for sociopath or not, is still their father. And when you say horrible things about their dad, they're feeling it's an attack on them. Even if it's not a direct attack, even if you're saying, but I love you and you have nothing to do with that, they still feel, I'm made up of my dad, and if he's so bad, then there's a part of me that's bad. And that's my, you know, my feelings on that, and I feel it's really important. That's why we have support groups and we have healing weekends for people to vent. And we have lots of support available. And also, therapy really gets you on the way. And I just want to get back to for a moment. Kathy has a practice in California, but Kathy can practice anywhere because she has Skype. She has telephone counseling, and we have women on all parts of the country now, you know, working with Kathy, so you don't have to be sitting in Orange County, California, although I wouldn't mind being there right now. But you can be anywhere and get Kathy to really get you on that road to healing. And if anybody understands this, it's Kathy, because she's been there, done it. And the women who come to tell me about Kathy and her counseling, they say she's phenomenal, that when their lives were falling apart, she's the one who was able to put them back on track and get them moving in a positive way. And I know that's so hard for some of us to find good therapists, and especially people who understand what we're going through. You know, a lot of times women are getting bad counseling, bad therapy, and it just hurts me to see how much time they invest in getting bad advice or therapists who don't understand the situation. And they spend months and money, and they get nowhere except more frustrated. Where here you have someone who's an expert, who understands and who can help you move past it, and, you know, she's available. So let's tell people how they can get to you, Kathy.
The best way is to go to my website, which is www.kholguin, H as in Harry, O-L, G as in girl, U-I-N, therapy.com.
And if you're listening to this, you know, podcast, and you can see on my website how to, or on the announcement, how Kathy spells her name. But also, you can go to mygayhusbands.com and go under links, and you'll see Kathy right there under therapist, and you can contact her, or just email me at bondk@aol.com, because she did get somewhat of a complicated name, nothing personal. But
I know.
Maybe you can change your website to KathyBestCounselor.com. Wouldn't that be great?
Oh, that would be awesome.
That's easy to remember. KathyHelpMe.com. How's that?
I like that.
I need something a little bit easier for people to remember. I always tell that to Suzette Vernon, who's our coach, who's a co-host with me every month. I said, Suzette, you got to get something like CoachSuzetteTheBest.com. Like something that people can remember. But, like I say, you can go right onto mygayhusbands.com and look under links, and Kathy's there. Or just, you're listening to the show, you see the little announcement about Kathy. And it's kholequintherapy.com?
Yep.
Is that right?
Okay. Yep,
and we'll
it.
Have it on a, we'll have it in our support group also. But Kathy is, like I say, an amazing therapist, and she can really get you on the road. Kathy, talk a little bit about your experiences at the healing weekends you've been to.
Oh, my goodness. They are just, I've been to three of them or four of them, and I'm going again into D.C., and definitely will be in Tennessee. And the healing weekends, I have several people I'm talking to even now that are in my clientele that I'm trying to get to go, because there's nothing like being so unsure about what the dynamic is in your home and with your husband, and sitting in a room and listening to 20, 25 people tell their story of confusion and their pain. And you don't have to be at any level. Like, you don't have to have it figured out, or you don't have to be past it, or you don't have to be. It's like anybody who's listening to your show who has made it to this point that's this curious about what's going on in their relationship, give yourself the gift to go to the healing weekend. It is a gift. And Bonnie gives it for, you give it for free, which I just can't even believe, Bonnie, because the amount of healing and the amount of support and love and non-judgment and it no lack of agenda is so amazing. And to truly have an entity where people just can be heard and can be held in their pain is absolutely non-existent in this world anymore, much less to get it for free. So the healing weekends are just amazing.
They are. And plus the fact that we're in all different stages of healing. Some people have been through their marriages. Some people are still in their marriages. Some people need help in getting out of their marriages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as long as you have the direction that you need to be free, then you'll be in the right place. And we don't judge where you are in this process. You're on your way to being yourself and having your life, taking your life back, like I'd like to call it. And Kathy will be there, and, you know, a couple of other wonderful women who are also therapists will be there. But you can actually meet Kathy in person and, you know, talk to her a little bit, maybe, you know, hook up with her there. So we have lots of opportunities for people to, you know, really get the most out of one weekend. And I see that people who come, it changes their lives. New friendships are made that last forever. New support groups are started. So if you want to join us, bonk@aol.com. And I just can't wait to see you, Kathy.
Oh, me too.
I'm hoping that you'll be back here before the healing weekend one more time, just to encourage people.
Oh, I would love to, Bonnie. And you know, I say to all of my clients that are listening, and I love you guys with all of my heart, and you are so special. And wrap your arms around yourself and give yourself a great big hug.
Because straight wives are the best wives, and we know that. So
no
we've
kidding.
Come to the end of our hour. And Kathy, thank you so much. Whenever you're with me, I always feel like a spark of renewable energy in my body. In this old body. But thank you so much for doing it. And I'll look forward to talking to you again one more time before the healing weekend.
Okay,
and I
Bonnie.
Think Kathy has agreed to be a semi-regular here every other month, right, Kath?
Absolutely, sure.
Okay, that'll be wonderful because our women love you. And I'll be talking to all of you again next week. Have a wonderful week, no matter where you are, in a blizzard, in a storm, but we'll all get through
be
it
safe.
Together. All right. So love you, Kathy.
Love you too, Vaughn. We'll talk to you guys
soon.
All right.
Good night, ladies. Have a wonderful week. Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye-bye.